This is IRIB English Radio.
Our headlines. Press TV's correspondent in Ukraine, Johnny Miller, says he's been placed on a kill list by Ukrainian ultra-nationalists after his revelations about violence against children in the Donbass region. Syria calls on the UN to condemn Israel's recent attacks on Damascus suburbs, saying it reserves the right to respond to the regime's repeated acts of aggression. Also ahead, Donald Trump's former aide, Steve Bannon, is convicted of contempt of Congress for refusing to appear before a committee investigating last year's attack on the U.S. Capitol. Thank you for joining us. Ever since the war in Ukraine started, Press TV have been closely following the developments there and keeping you up to date. Central to that effort has been our correspondent on the ground there, Johnny Miller. Reporting from a war-ravaged country was always going to present its own challenges and risks. But now Johnny says he's been placed on a kill list of an ultra-nationalist group in Ukraine. This after he reported on a story about a kill list associated with the Ukrainian government promoting violence against pro-Russian children in the Donbass region. A number of journalists have been killed in Ukraine after being put on the list.
The notorious Ukrainian website Mirotvorets, meaning peacemaker, it publishes the names and addresses of those it deems to be enemies of Ukraine. The opening page shows pictures of dead Russian soldiers. On the list are domestic and foreign journalists, politicians, and citizens that in some way they view to have aided or worked with pro-Russian forces in the country. Now, shamefully, they are adding children to the list. Faina Sevenkova, she is 13 years old and has been writing about her experiences here in Donbass. After her name appeared on the list, she started to receive threats of physical violence online.
Are you worried about being on the website? Are you concerned that something might happen to you?
Yes, of course. A person I knew got to know my address and came to greet me for my birthday. These are good intentions, but something worse can happen. Websites like this shouldn't exist. They're illegal. They put many people in danger, children as well. I have a friend who was put on there because she wrote a poem about war.
Numerous journalists and public figures have been murdered after being put on the list, like Oles Bazina, who was shot near his home in Kiev, and Andrea Riccelli, an Italian journalist. After he was killed on the front line, the website posted liquidated over his photo. The Committee to Protect Journalists has previously written to the Ukrainian government asking them to condemn the unfounded and damaging allegations published on Mirotvorets and to clarify publicly that the Ukrainian Interior Ministry is dedicated to protecting journalists. The United Nations and Human Rights Watch have also condemned the site. Diana Spitkonen, a Finnish journalist in Donbass, he's also on the list.
It's all against all international laws, and you shouldn't have right, any country shouldn't have a right to do that kind of like hunting list, kill lists of people and put it to the public, especially. It's a very brutal way how to cause people serious problems, and many have lost their lives because of being on that list.
The website clearly states it provides information for law enforcement authorities and special services. Ukrainian government ministers have praised the site, and it is actively used by the authorities to track and detain enemies of the state.
While Western media and governments try to whitewash the extremist or far-right neo-Nazi elements here in Ukraine, calling it Russian propaganda, for a website promoted, supported, and used by the government that openly encourages violence towards children is a clear indication that Ukraine does have a serious problem with state-sponsored extremism.
They're basically encouraging people to kill people on the list?
Yeah. That's why I've been in since 2015. I certainly cannot fall to the Ukrainian hands because I am on that list with several pages even. But like the old saying is that the other's one's terrorist is another one's freedom fighter. And hopefully all sense and truth and peace-loving people understand that all these people in that list are heroes.
To openly encourage violence towards children takes a special kind of evil, an evil that NATO countries, as they continue to pump Ukraine with money, weapons and political support, seem unwilling or incapable to challenge. Johnny Miller, Donbass.
We have talked to independent German war correspondent Alina Lipp, who's been on the kill list of Ukraine's ultra-nationalists. She says the list endangers the lives of journalists in Ukraine. Have a listen.
Unfortunately, I'm familiar with this list. They put me on it last year in November. I just came here in October and stayed to cover the situation, the situation in Donbass in German, well, for Germans. And what I was doing practically was only translating interviews I did with people who live here in Donbass into German. And for that, they put me on this kill list, you can say. And I, for myself, I also don't understand why, because I'm certainly not a kind of person you should kill or who should be killed. And yes, John also, they put also John now on this list. There's also a 13 years old girl they put on it, and it definitely is dangerous, because there are several persons who they put on this list and then who have been killed afterwards. Well, actually, nobody knows about this list in the West because nobody is telling them, the people. There's a huge informational wall, blockade between Ukraine, Russia, and the West. So there are lots of lies and fakes they show to the, for example, the German people, and they just don't know what's going on here. And of course, this topic should be discussed more deeply, and people have to know about this, because it's really unbelievable and very dangerous for lots of journalists.
Well, record high temperatures are causing France to take increasingly drastic measures amid the West's sanctions campaign against Russia. Citizens are being asked to conserve power, with energy cuts this winter already being called a certainty. Romy Mazohiri has more from Paris.
Due to their decision to sanction Russia over the unrest in Ukraine, France and the European Union are desperately trying to build energy stocks ahead of this winter. However, a record heat wave has created a surge in energy consumption, and that's prompted the government to informally call for the rationing of electricity. Citizens have been pushed to make an effort by cutting off Wi-Fi, unplugging appliances, and going without air conditioning. Many in poor neighborhoods say they expect their streets to go dark earlier and for their social services to be affected first. The West's sanctions campaign against Russia continues to force the average household into paying a steep price.
It's very difficult to see this crisis getting better by 2023. Finding alternative sources for gas and petrol will cause higher prices. Renewable energy will be more expensive. France isn't a big coal producer. France is already depleting its petrol and gas stocks. So every choice away from Russian energy is going to increase energy prices.
In order to have more control over the national energy grid, this week the government announced that they will totally renationalize the company Electricity of France. The energy giant runs all of the nation's nuclear power plants. Nuclear power provides nearly 70% of France's energy, the most of any country in the world. But a recent series of outages have caused nuclear power output to drop to its lowest level in nearly 30 years. Leaders of French energy corporations recently said that energy cuts are certain for this winter and that prolonged cold spells may threaten social and political cohesion.
The best solution is to negotiate with Russia to end the war in Ukraine. But we also need the leaders of the European Union to stop living in an isolated fishbowl. where pushing for more war is a good idea. This energy and economic crisis is affecting all citizens.
A proposal to give the European Union the right to impose mandatory gas rationing across the bloc's 27 member countries was immediately shot down by the nations of Southern Europe this week. They called it the farthest-reaching power grab by Brussels this year. And it was especially controversial because individual national vetoes were not allowed under an emergency procedure employed by the leaders of the European Union. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Syria has called on the United Nations to condemn Israel's attack on Damascus suburbs on Friday that killed three soldiers and injured seven others. In separate letters to the UN Secretary General and the UN Security Council, the Syrian Foreign Ministry said Damascus reserves the right to respond to Israel's repeated acts of aggression. The ministry added that the UN should take action to prevent Israel's attacks. Iran also strongly denounced the Israeli raids as atrocious and clear violation of Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Tehran also criticized the silence of international bodies, especially the Security Council, in the face of what it called Israel's persistent crimes and dangerous behavior. The anti-Iran MKO terrorist group, which is based in Albania, postpones a summit scheduled for later this month, citing security reasons. The terrorist cult says it has shelved the two-day meeting until further notice upon recommendations by the government. This after the U.S. Embassy warned American citizens against taking part in the event. The meeting was set to be held on July 23rd and 24th in the group's Albanian base called Camp Ashraf 3. The MKO launched a series of bombings and assassinations in Iran, mostly in the 1980s. Iranian authorities hold the group responsible for the death of more than 17,000 people in Iran. But the cult has been enjoying freedom of activity in the West since being delisted by the EU and the U.S. in 2009 and 2012, respectively. Over the past years, dozens of Western politicians, among them former U.S. officials, have taken part in the group's annual meetings in Europe. Over the past months, MKO agents have assaulted many Iranian nationals in several European countries. Last month, a Press TV reporter and her news team were attacked while covering an exhibition in Sweden that displayed the crimes committed by the group. Historian and social activist Olsi Jaseshi joined us earlier from Tirana. He says there is more to the cancellation of the MKO terrorist group's summit than the alleged security concerns.
The Mujahideens, they are exactly like the Iranians call them, munafiqs, hypocrites. I mean, they use a lot of fake news. They always play the victim. If you see their propaganda here in Albania, they always claim to be victims of Iran. They have, in a way, brainwashed huge segments of Albanian society by playing the victim, even though they are the criminal. So I don't think that the cancellation of their event was related to the issue of security. The issue of security was, in a way, the excuse which the U.S. Embassy here in Tirana used in order to order the Mujahideens and our government as well to cancel their event. The Mujahideens, they are the most protected people here in Albania. They are even more protected than our president or prime minister. They are protected by our secret service, by a private army that they have, and the private Albanian security guards who guard them with weapons. So, I mean, any excuse or any claim that Mujahideens are threatened in any way possible is not true. But the opposite is true. The Mujahideens in the past months have launched a very dirty campaign against their defectors here in Albania. Around 500 Mujahideens have defected the cult, and around 50 are here in Tirana, who they refuse to be recruited as terrorist soldiers for Mariam Rajavi. What Rajavi has done, she has in a way managed to take over Albanian security services, and she's using the courts and the office of the prosecutors, anti-terrorism police, to harass the defectors. On the other hand, Rajavi and her cult, they have managed to buy most of the medias in Albania. Most journalists here in Albania, they are terrorized by the Mujahideens. They do not report anything against them because they know that they immediately can lose their job. So the claim that Mujahideens are threatened in any way possible is a pure lie.
A jury has convicted a top advisor to former U.S. President Donald Trump of contempt of Congress. Steve Bannon was found guilty for refusing to appear before a congressional committee investigating the January 6, 2021 storming of the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters. Bannon was subpoenaed by the January 6 committee last September. Now he is facing up to 2 years in jail. The former Trump ally had served as chief strategist to then-president before being fired in 2017. Trump supporters raided the Congress in January 2021 to block the certification of Joe Biden as U.S. president amid allegations of rigged elections. Five people were killed during the unrest. Well, that's your world news for now.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
A 2024 rematch between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump seems almost certain, as both men have indicated their intention to run again in 2 years. But recent polling suggests there could be a different result in 2024. The article you're about to hear has been written by Newsweek journalist Derek Roche. The article has been published by Newsweek and is titled "Biden-Trump 2024 Rematch is Almost Certain. Polls Indicate Different Result." The 2024 rematch between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump seems almost certain, as both men have indicated their intention to run again in 2 years. But recent polling suggests there could be a different result in 2024. While neither Joe Biden nor Donald Trump has made any official announcement about a presidential campaign, Trump has all but confirmed that he will seek another term in the Oval Office. "Well, in my mind, I've already made that decision, so nothing factors in anymore. In my own mind, I've already made that decision," Donald Trump told New York Magazine on 14th of July. He added that, "My big decision will be whether I go before or after," apparently referring to the upcoming midterm elections this November. The White House has repeatedly said it's Joe Biden's intention to seek another term, and that resolve may be reinforced if Donald Trump makes a formal move. Ted Kaufman, a longtime confidant of Joe Biden, told The Washington Post in an article published on Tuesday that he does feel like he's the best option against Trump. "But the primary thing is, how would he feel if he doesn't do it, and if Trump gets elected president? This would be very, very bad for the country, and did I do all I could to stop this from happening?" Ted Kaufman said. Though a rematch now seems more likely than not, recent polls show Biden could potentially lose in 2024 contest against Trump. The president won in 2020, despite unfounded claims of fraud and other irregularities levied by Donald Trump and some of his allies. Joe Biden won 51.3% of the popular vote in 2020, while Donald Trump won 46.9%. However, recent opinion polls show a much closer race. A Trafalgar Group poll conducted from 11th to 14th of July showed Trump would defeat Biden in 2024, with the former president enjoying 47.9% support to Joe Biden's 42.6%. That opinion poll surveyed 1,085 likely general election voters. A YouGov opinion poll from 8th to 11th of July among 1,261 registered voters showed Biden with a slight lead of 44% to Trump's 43%. But among 1,672 adults surveyed, Trump beat Biden with 40% to the president's 39%. A Redfield and Wilton Strategies opinion poll conducted on 9th of July showed a similar result. Among the 1,078 likely voters surveyed, Donald Trump enjoyed 43% support and Joe Biden 41%. Among 1,500 registered voters in the same poll, Trump had 36% and Biden enjoyed 33% support. At Siena College, the New York Times upshot poll from 5th to 7th of July was better news for Joe Biden as he led Donald Trump with 44% to the Republicans 41%. That poll surveyed 849 registered voters. The most recent polling, therefore, paints a mixed picture, but the figure seems concerning for Joe Biden, especially considering his stubbornly low approval rating. Poll tracker 538's analysis gave Joe Biden an approval rating of just 38.6% as of Tuesday, 19th of July, while disapproval of the president was at 55.7%. The next presidential election cycle won't really begin until the first primary contest in early 2024, though announcements may be expected in late 2023. If Donald Trump decides to make a formal announcement this year, he could upend the process and potentially force Joe Biden's hand. President Joe Biden is facing some of the toughest criticism in his time as U.S. leader, with November's midterm elections widely anticipated to end the Democratic majority in Congress. The cost of living crisis, gun control, and abortion rights have dominated headlines over the past few months. Joe Biden's approval rating have in recent weeks fallen behind the levels former President Donald Trump experienced at the same point in his presidency. However, this week, Joe Biden fiercely rebuked the challenges to his popularity among Democrats, insisting he had the support of his party. A video of Biden posted on Twitter on 12th of July shows the president challenging a reporter who had asked him what his message was to Democrats who don't want you to run again. "They want me to run," Joe Biden said. The reporter responded by saying, "Two-thirds say they don't." Joe Biden replied, "Read the polls, Jack. You guys are all the same. That poll showed that 92% of Democrats, if I ran, would vote for me."
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone, and let us hear some hopeful words of divine mercy from the master of eloquence, the commander of the faithful, the leader of the pious, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, Peace be upon him. Every person who is tempted to go astray does not deserve punishment.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Principles of Friendship. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. My name is Hussein Hinzano, and you're listening to A to Z. Now, in today's lesson, we are going to talk about principles of friendship. I would like to point out a point. I would like to speak on something that's important in the matters of principles of friendship, and that is how to choose a friend, how to make the right choices while you are choosing a friend. When choosing a friend or a brother in life, we must choose him with special caution and guidance, of course. And after good knowledge of his personality, through our relation with him in schools, in the mosque, in the compound, in the working place, or maybe while traveling or through correspondence, etc., etc., we must be very careful and cautious of this type of relationship and friendship, because they are not known to us in the beginning. So what we're trying to say here is that whenever you're going out to choose a friend, whenever you want to choose a friend, make sure you know the person first before choosing them to be your friend, before choosing them to be your life partner. A friend is like a life partner. The moment you have a friend, it means that you have a life partner. You have someone who is actually connecting with you in terms of your intellect. You have someone who sits with you on the same table to discuss on very important matters of your life. So you need to be careful to know which kind of person is this. What does he like? How does he live? How is his day-to-day life activities? How is his behavior? How is the relationship of this particular person to his God, to his parents, to the people he's living with? Does he talk good to the people he's living with? Does he talk good to Allah? Does he pray on time? Does he, like, you know, work and do things according to the time, according to accept? Does he do things timely? Like if he's told to be somewhere at 2:30, does he come at 2:30 exactly or what? All these studies that we're doing on this particular person is something that is going to help you know who you are dealing with, who is going to be your friend. So the most important thing on choosing your friend is knowing the kind of person who you want to be friends with.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to A to Z program from IRB English Radio. Now, we've been talking about the principles of friendship. And in the previous, a few minutes ago, I was talking about how to make a good choice in terms of choosing your friends. How can I choose a good friend? How can I make my partnership with a friend a good partnership? How can I be successful in this process? So we say that one of the main things, one of the major things that we should look at is that whenever you're choosing that particular person, you need to be careful and look at the person to see what kind of a person he is, what kind of habits that particular person has, what kind of life that particular person lives. So all this will make you make a better choice in choosing that particular friend who we said is going to be your life partner, is going to be someone you need to be close with in your life. So dear friends, dear listeners, this is what we need to be looking at right now. Now, in accordance to this, Allah the Almighty says in the Holy Quran, chapter 43, verse number 64, friends on that day will be foes one to another, except those who keep their duties. It portrays the saying, whatever the verse is trying to say here, is that you are going to regret whenever you choose a bad partner in your life. You need to choose a partner that is going to be useful to your life, is going to be useful to you, is going to make you better. And if you don't do that, and the verse says here, then you are going to regret you being a partner to that particular person. Because on the day of judgment, whatever the other person does, it's more likely to be counted on you too. He does bad things, they're counted on you because you've been together. You've been living together. You've been together in many platforms. So he does a bad thing, it's like you've done a bad thing. You do a bad thing, it's like he's done a bad thing. So in what is this trying to say? That the person you are being friends with is going to reflect on your deeds, is going to reflect on your deeds, not just in this world, but in the hereafter. So we need to be careful when you're choosing friends. We need to know them well. Thank you so much for listening to our program. Inshallah, thanks for listening. Till next episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Geologists are rejoicing over a new discovery. A 290-million-old fossil forest has accidentally been found in southern Brazil. A team of geologists had been sent to the state of Paraná to investigate the rocks there. To their surprise, they were able to find over 160 logs of lycophytes, an extinct variety of the vascular plant subgroup. It's quite rare occurrence that a large number of fossils of the plant were found preserved in upright position for such a long time. The forest itself was discovered in 2018 when a street was being constructed over there. So far, only two other similar collections have been found in smaller forest areas of Brazil and Argentina. Summer heat is here, and zoos are working to not only keep visitors cool, but animals safe during the hot weather. A Belgian zoo takes extra precautions to help animals survive a fierce heat wave that has left Western Europe sweltering. Pairi d'Azur Zoo, located in Wallonia in the province of Hainaut, provides animals with frozen food, fruit suspended in water, and extra showers. It has also created extra shaded areas with good ventilation along with water points to ensure animals have access to them. Zookeepers say managing animals in high temperatures requires good forward planning. Zoos across the world have a variety of responses to keep animals cool. So we humans are not the only creatures who feel significant stress during the hot months. Animals, too, are impacted by it. The biggest and brightest supermoon of 2022 has risen with a crimson hue above horizons across the globe. It's also known as a buck moon because it falls in July. The name does not come from its appearance. You won't see the shape of a deer on the moon's surface or anything. It refers to something that happens in nature at this time. It's called a buck moon because the antlers of male deer or bucks are in full growth in July. Supermoons occur when a full moon comes closest to Earth in its orbit. This is not the last supermoon of 2022. There will be another in August, marking the final supermoon in this year's set of four. Some rescue stories are tragic, but this one has a happy ending. A stranded elephant and her calf have been pulled out of a drainage hole in a dramatic rescue mission during monsoon rains in Thailand. The mother elephant was guarding her calf that had fallen into a golf course drain hole when rescuers arrived. Vets had to use tranquilizers to subdue the frantic mother. But on her way down, she hit her head on a concrete block, knocking her unconscious as she fell into the muddy cavity. Rescuers used a crane to lift her out. It took two men jumping up and down on her chest to resuscitate her. Meanwhile, a digger was brought in to move the muddy earth and create a ramp for the calf to climb out. It took the team more than 3 hours to finish the operation. During a routine X-ray examination of one of Van Gogh's paintings, art conservators at the National Galleries of Scotland have discovered a secret self-portrait.
When we saw the X-ray for the first time, of course, we were hugely excited, absolutely thrilled to bits. Such a major discovery of an alternative composition happens once, twice in a conservator's lifetime.
The self-portrait was found during an examination of an 1885 painting by Van Gogh as the museum was prepping for an upcoming exhibition on Impressionism. Hidden from view for over a century, the self-portrait is on the reverse side of the Dutch artist's painting called The Head of a Peasant Woman. It was found beneath cardboard and layers of glue. Van Gogh is known to have often reused his canvases, working on their reverse side as well.
When he took the painting to Paris, he didn't have very much money. He was scrabbling around and decided clearly to use the back of these series of paintings that he'd brought with him from the Netherlands to Paris to explore self-portraiture for the first time.
Experts at the museum believe the materials covering the self-portrait were applied in the early 20th century before the art went on display. Art historians say when Vincent van Gogh was low on money, he took to painting on both sides of his canvases, but over the years, some of his reverse side paintings were covered up and lost. The X-ray image will feature at the Royal Scottish Academy in Edinburgh starting in July.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Children in Qatar are helping a conservation program revive the population of a critically endangered species of turtles. The children help release the baby turtles after they hatch, which usually takes place during the dark hours of the evening. The hawksbill mothers are cared for, if needed, when they arrive at the beach to lay their eggs. When the little turtles emerge, the weaker ones are taken to facilities at the foundation. There, they are cared for until they are strong enough to be returned to sea. Program managers say getting children involved helps raise awareness about the endangered species and how they can help prevent some of the challenges these turtles face.
As adults, we are kind of beyond hope. Our brain is no longer plastic. We can't really learn new things. But children have the power to really internalize all these things that they're learning, that they're seeing. They make these habits part of their life. They make decisions based on, is it good for the environment, alongside with economic value for money kind of decisions. And this is what we want to cultivate.
The children also get a chance to form bonds with the hawksbill turtles. Some of them have even named the one they are going to release. That's why life experts with the conservation program say only 1% of every 1,000 hatchlings make it to adulthood. Poaching, climate change, fishing nets and marine pollution have all contributed to the dwindling numbers of the species. The program was launched roughly a decade ago and has released 30,000 hatchlings into the sea in the last 5 years. Experts are optimistic about the success of the program.
The more scientists make progress in space exploration, the more they get persuaded to delve into the mysteries of the universe. Now, the release of stunning full-color images from deep in the cosmos has put astronomers on the edge of their seats. NASA has unveiled high-resolution pictures from its James Webb telescope, which is the largest space-based observatory ever launched. The images took 2 weeks to render from raw telescope data. The $9 billion infrared James Webb was launched on Christmas in 2021. It reached its destination in solar orbit nearly 1 million miles from Earth a month later. Then the telescope underwent months-long process to unfurl all of its components. James Webb is now finely tuned and fully focused. The telescope is expected to shed light on the life cycles on planets of planets and galaxies.
The International Fajr Fashion and Clothing Festival has drawn fashion designers from Iran and around the world. The designs displayed are trendy and at the same time they conform to the Islamic dress code. Yusuf Jalali has this report.
It's the Iranian fashion's biggest day. The 11th Fajr Fashion and Clothing Festival brought under one roof fashion designers from across Iran and some other Muslim nations to step up their designs.
I have participated here as a fashion designer. I am so happy to be a part of this event because it acts as a platform that links designers to producers and it helps like promote quality design in the market.
This festival is a major event in the Islamic world's fashion industry because it helps promote fashionable clothes that conform to Islamic guidelines.
A typical Iranian woman wears a button-up coat called manto and a scarf covering the head. Some others wear a piece of cloth called chador, which covers the body from head to toe. One of the challenges Iranian fashion designers have to deal with is to tailor their designs to Islamic dress code or hijab while keeping them trendy.
Clothes represent the identity of a nation. As a designer, my mission is to design clothes that best represent the dresser's nationality and their culture. At the same time, the aesthetic aspect of the garment needs to catch the attention. I think this is an ultimate artistry if accomplished.
Smuggling is another persisting problem in the Iranian clothing industry. Out of the $8 billion annual turnover of Iran's garment industry, a whopping $5 billion is supplied through smuggling, say activists here. Experts say one of the reasons smuggling has the lion's share in Iran's clothing market is that it's more cost-effective to import foreign clothes rather than produce them domestically.
We are making our best efforts to push down the production costs, including the associated taxes, in order to promote designs that reflect our Islamic and Iranian identities, opposed to Western designs that seek to dominate global markets.
With all the actors in Iran's fashion industry present in the Fajr Festival, the event is seen as a place to highlight and address the challenges, with the aim to provide the stage for Iranian fashion activists to shine in the domestic market.
It might seem contradictory when we would associate fashion with the Islamic dress code, but it's the art of a fashion designer that sews traditions to style and designs clothes that are both stylish and hijab. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Elephants are the largest living animals on Earth that, in many cultures, are associated with good luck, wisdom and fertility. But their overpopulation has become a matter of concern in the southeastern African nation of Malawi.
We want to reduce the population of elephants in this park, in Luanda National Park, because currently we have 600 plus elephants in this park. We would be comfortable, ecologically speaking, that is, to have 300 elephants in this park.
Officials say they will relocate 250 elephants from a national park in a southern town to another park by the end of July. They say the plan is part of a national conservation initiative to maintain healthy habitats in the country's national parks. Establishing viable elephant populations and ensuring the prosperity of local communities around the parks are said to be the other aspects. Residents say the elephants often stray into their gardens and damage their crops. Authorities had relocated some 300 elephants from the same town in 2019.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In Britain, the Conservative leadership race has exploded into acrimony and recrimination after the first televised debate saw open arguments over tax and identity politics, with none of the five candidates willing to say Boris Johnson is honest. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's political correspondent Peter Walker. The piece is titled "Tory Leadership Rivals Clash Over Trust and Fairy Tale Economic Plans." In Britain, the Conservative leadership race has exploded into acrimony after the first televised debate saw open arguments over tax and identity politics, with none of the five candidates willing to say that Boris Johnson is honest. Coming hours after Liz Truss sought to reinvigorate her faltering campaign with a sudden announcement of a new tax cut costing more than £20 billion a year, Rishi Sunak, the former Chancellor, openly ridiculed his former colleague's plans during the Channel 4 broadcast on Friday evening, 15th of July. Condemning what he called a wider unfunded spree of borrowing and more debt among his competitors, Rishi Sunak condemned Liz Truss's proposal to put off repayments of public debt built up due to COVID. "There is no such thing as COVID debt," a visibly irritated Sunak told the Foreign Secretary, Liz Truss. Debt is debt, and the answer to too much borrowing can't be yet more borrowing. It's as simple as that. When Liz Truss argued that better monetary policy would mitigate inflation even with tax cuts, Rishi Sunak snapped. Liz, we have to be honest. Borrowing your way out of inflation isn't a plan. It's a fairy tale. In an often difficult night for all the candidates, also comprising of Penny Mordaunt, the trade minister, the former levelling up minister, Kemi Badenoch, and the backbencher, Tom Tuggenhat, not a single member of the audience of floating voters raised their hands when asked if they trusted politicians. A long section on trust saw none of the five candidates willing to say whether Boris Johnson was honest. Sometimes, said Badenoch, while Penny Mordaunt talked about really severe issues, and Liz Truss spoke of mistakes. Tom Tuggenhat won applause by saying simply, no. A separate show of hands after a debate on energy bills saw just three people say they felt politicians were doing enough to help people. When asked at the end of the debate if it had made them more likely to vote Conservative, only 10 of the audience raised their hands. A separate spat saw Penny Mordaunt and Kemi Badenoch clash, with visible enmity among the two. When Liz Truss declined to back up her version of events about policies in the government's Equalities Office, Kemi Badenoch said, "Come on, Liz, tell the truth." Penny Mordaunt, meanwhile, asked about negative briefings about her from some of other camps, refused to say she trusted the other candidates. So far, two rounds of voting among Tory MPs, who are gradually reducing the field down to a final two candidates, with a winner then decided by the party members, has been Rishi Sunak gained the most support, followed by Penny Mordaunt, Liz Truss, Kemi Badenoch, and then Tom Tuggenhat. The backbencher, who is expected to be ousted in the next round on Monday, used the debate to seek to set himself apart from the other candidates, all of whom had served under Boris Johnson. Tuggenhat said, "I've been holding a mirror to many of our actions and asking those in our party, those in our leadership positions, to ask themselves, is that what the public really expects?" In an earlier question-and-answer session hosted by the Conservative Home website, Liz Truss sought to regain the initiative in the race by promising to scrap a planned rise in corporation tax and suspend green energy levies, costing more than £20 billion a year overall. The unexpected offer came on top of an existing pledge by Liz Truss to reverse a rise in national insurance, worth another almost £11 billion a year. "We immediately need to start putting money back into people's pockets. We know families are struggling to make ends meet at the moment," she said. It has been estimated that scrapping the planned rise in corporation tax from 19% to 25% next year would cost about £15 billion a year. Suspending green levels on energy bills could cost an estimated £5 billion a year. The Labour Party has condemned an arms race of uncosted tax cut pledges among the candidates. The former Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, has said he would wait to stabilise inflation before cutting any taxes. In a boost to Liz Truss, shortly after the debate, the Attorney General, Suella Braverman, who was eliminated from the contest after finishing last in Thursday's MP's vote, reiterated her call for her supporters to switch to the Foreign Secretary. Suella Braverman is ideologically close to Kemi Badenoch, but in a robustly worded message to supporters, Braverman urged them to look realistically at the numbers and back Liz Truss, the other candidate seen as being firmly under right of the Conservative Party.
Midstream.
What prompted U.S. President Joe Biden to visit the region was not signing the Jerusalem Declaration and declaring his absolute support for Israel, nor supporting the normalization process, nor in order to reassure his allies in the Persian Gulf states, rather in order to preserve American political and economic interests. President Biden seeks in his no more than ordinary visit to preserve his administration's vision towards West Asia by working to reduce escalation and tension, preparing his regional allies to sign a nuclear agreement with Iran, asserting the United States' global hegemony, and warning the Persian Gulf Arab regimes against strengthening their relations with Russia and China. However, above all this, Biden is seeking to enhance the chances of the Democratic Party in the elections next November, and anything below that goal is already in place, from hostility to the resistance forces, marginalization of the Palestinian cause, support for the normalization path, and unhinging support for Israel as long as it preserves American interests. The Jerusalem Declaration did not bring anything new in terms of the relationship between the United States and Israel. But what was new was the retreat of the Israeli celebrations of the declaration, as the enemy realized that the United States is no longer what it was, and that the status of Israel within the United States has declined and is no longer a matter of American consensus. Israel fears that at some point it will face security threats alone, and that the United States will not fight on its behalf. And it realizes that the Jerusalem Declaration will not give it security and stability in the region, not to mention that it includes nothing new. So if not strictly for supporting Israel, what does Joe Biden hope to get from his visit to West Asia? The U.S. is clearly suffering from external crisis due to the war in Ukraine, with its political and economic repercussions on the United States and its allies in Europe, and faces global challenges that threaten the American unipolar order, as opposed to the pursuit of Russia, China, Iran, and other countries to create a multipolar order. Hence, the United States of America is seeking to restore its control over energy resources in West Asia by re-establishing Persian Gulf oil and Mediterranean gas to its importance, increasing its production while reducing its prices. However, countries allied to the United States of America in West Asia no longer trust America and its ability to play a leading role in the region, not to mention the problems that the leaders of those countries face internally. It seems that American unipolar era is about to end, and its termination will be activated in West Asia. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Amar Osman. The visit of U.S. President Joe Biden to West Asia can be read through several levels, which in total represent the main objective of that visit. On the strategic level, his visit comes in the midst of the fierce and declared struggle of the United States of America with China and Russia over the battle to formulate an international system as the unipolar American era nears its end. Therefore, the United States of America is seeking to restore its control over energy resources in the Middle East after the Ukrainian-Russian war forced it to search for sources of energy for its European allies, which restored the importance of the Persian Gulf oil and the Mediterranean gas. To discuss this issue, with us from London is Mr. Jesse Zurawol, writer, editor, researcher, and also producer and host at TNT Radio. Thank you very much for being with us, Jesse. Now, the United States of America has returned to the policy of alliances that it pursued back in the 1960s, and it continued throughout the Cold War with that same strategy. Hence, we see Biden restoring relationship with Saudi Arabia under the slogan, quote, American interests are above humanitarian principles, unquote, to increase Persian Gulf oil production while